Good morning. I'd like to start with a big thank you for the opportunity to come here again. On behalf of myself, on behalf of my Colonel Leonard, it's always a privilege. The topic that we picked for this morning is different forms of stealing. Is it stealing? Is it not stealing? And as always, I'd like to hear everyone's opinion. The story starts off like this. Yankel, he went to his local grocery shop, and he went to the wine section, and he looked for a very specific bottle of wine that he was planning to buy. He was very excited about this wine, and he located the bottle, went to the till, paid for the bottle, and went home to show his wife his new purchase, and he was beaming about it. And his wife turns to Yankel and says, "Yankel, that's not the bottle you've been looking for. That's the wrong one. You bought the wrong one." Yankel became very sad. He ran back to the shop. And he entered the shop and he went straight to the till. He said, "Please, please, give me a refund. I want to swap it. Please give me a refund." They said, "No, we can't swap it. Big situation." He said, "Bring the manager here." The manager came. He said, "I'm really sorry, no refunds. We don't have the wine you want anyway. We don't do refunds." He says, "Why not? Give me a refund now." And he points to the wall, and on the wall in big, big letters, it says, "No refunds, only credit voucher at the shop floor manager's discretion." Yankel was living. And the floor manager saw he was getting very angry, so he ran to the back of the shop, took out a pre-signed voucher to the value of the bottle of wine, and he came out, presented Yankel with a voucher. Yankel snatched the voucher, he couldn't even talk, and he went home and told his wife what happened. Yankel's wife listened with a compassionate ear to all what transpired, and they devised a plan of how to transform this voucher into money. Because that's what he wanted. He wanted to get that bottle of wine, get the money, go to a different shop, and get what he wanted. So his wife told him, "Yankel, go tomorrow morning, stand next to the queue, take your voucher, and when you spot someone, instead of paying with a card, pay with cash. Quickly, do a little swap, he'll take your voucher, and you'll take his cash. Show him where he's from." So Yankel, down with Nate, the next morning, he arrived 10 minutes before the shop opened up, and the second the shop doors opened, he ran over to the queue and waited there. He waited for several hours, as we know the minute is to pay nowadays with card. Finally, he spotted his neighbour, Shimon. And he spotted him pulling out a nice wad of cash. And Yankel shouted to Shimon, "Shimon, stop!" And Shimon got a bit of a shock. And Yankel said, "Quickly, let's swap. You give me your cash, I'll give you my voucher. It doesn't make a difference to you." And Shimon's like, "Oh, I always wanted to show you Akarsatayv. I owe you so much Akarsatayv, Yankel. Let's swap my cash for your voucher." And all of a sudden, from behind one of the aisles, the manager pops out and he screams, "Don't you dare! Don't you dare swap that voucher for that cash." That person in the queue was about to spend money in the shop, and now you're taking away that cash and you're using the voucher instead. And Yankel's like, "What do you care? What do you care if I swap my voucher for his cash?" And the person behind the shop said, "No, you're going to be taking away our customer who would have been paying cash otherwise. You would have had to spend that voucher otherwise." And a very big fight broke out. Security had to escort Yankel and his voucher out of the shop. And they went to a dinner. So the question here that I'd like to address today is such a situation permitted? Is it permitted when someone is standing in a queue in a shop about to pay cash? Can someone else hop around and swap their voucher that they have no use for and swap the voucher for cash? What could be a possible problem, like the sign said? Is it a problem? That was the title of the shit. Is it a problem?
He's losing his sale.
Oh, he points the guy's losing his sale. Yeah. So would there be a difference in the shop, in the queue, at the queue, maybe?
Why is he losing his sale?
It didn't say non-transferable. Let's say it didn't say non-transferable.
Why is he losing his sale? Ultimately, that voucher is going to be exchanged for a £20, whatever it is. And
so we'll put it into figures. Imagine I had a voucher for £500. That gentleman, Shimon in the queue, also was going to spend that £500. So ultimately, before the voucher swap happened, there was £1,000 coming into the shop. And what have I done? I've intercepted that £500 which Shimon was going to put into the shop.
I would have taken £500 worth of goods out.
Yeah, but that's £1,000 worth of a sale.
Yeah.
You would have had an extra £500.
You're taking £500.
Instead of Shimon spending his £500, Shimon's spending my £500. Imagine. We'll make it simpler. Yeah, but now he can spend it again. Of course, then we'll have to give him that money, that exchange. Either way, him swapping the voucher is going to be stopping Shimon spending the money.
He's only forcing the refund.
Sorry?
He's only forcing the refund.
Yeah, but he's forcing the refund on the expense of another customer. Is that permitted? If Shimon would be approached outside the shop and Yankel would say to Shimon, can I buy it for you? Then you can see clearly that Shimon's not going to be spending his own money on the purchase. Yankel's going to be buying it and reselling it to Shimon.
He's got no buyers over here, though.
Who's got no buyers?
The manager's got no buyers over the person's purchasing stuff. He's still holding the cash in his hand.
Oh, so we'll see about this. This is the Shire. Very, very, very good. You're pointing out the Nakud. The point here, over here, is someone standing in a queue, cash in hand, about to pay for something.
In a shop.
What level of ownership, or what level of is there any, we'll call it buyers, is there any ownership, is there any claim that the shop can have, the manager can have, to stop what's going on here? You're pointing out he doesn't own that money. The shop owner doesn't own the money in the hand of Shimon. Shimon owns his money, and it's up to Shimon to choose whatever he wants to do. So that's the question.
If he gave the cashier the money.
If he gave the cashier, yeah, I hear, because then you say there's been a transfer, there's a Kenyan, there's already money in the hand of the shop owner. Yeah, I hear. All valid points that will better be addressed. Now, the way I want to approach this topic, in preparing for this shiur, the more I've looked into this topic, the bigger it's been. So I thought of a way to condense it and to put it into a way for us to approach it, would be a nice way is to look at a tshuva. It was a very interesting story, well, Din Torah, that took place in Bnei Brak, with the old Gaivin of Bnei Brak, Rav Landau. There was a certain neighborhood, and this neighborhood had one makolet, which is one grocery store, and in that grocery store, they sold me'alapad tov, all the basic necessities plus more. Now, there was a different person who lived in that neighborhood, and he thought of a brilliant business idea. He's going to go around to every single house in the neighborhood and knock on their door and ask them how much milk they would like waiting for them on their doorstep each morning. A milkman service, like we have in England, used to be. And the person who owned the grocery shop brought the milkman to a din Torah. And he had two claims against the milkman. Claim number one was that I've been selling milk in this town for years. I have the rights to sell the milk. And his second claim was that you've got to understand what milk is. Milk isn't just milk. The fact that everyone needs milk is a reason for them all to have to come to my shop. And once they come in my shop, they buy lots of other things. So he's saying, you're not just ruining my sale of milk, which is profitable. You're ruining all the profits that I make on the rest of the items that I have in my shop from this sort of this mashicha that the milk has, basic necessity has, that causes people to come to the shop. So those were the two claims.
He just said that there's one makolet.
One makolet.
One makolet there, so any house is going there. Not for the milk, everything else.
Yeah, for everything else, but it seems like people would go without certain things. People know when they go to a shop, certain things they do buy, certain things they don't buy, maybe they buy less. Whatever the reasons were, But it's a good point. If they would anyway go, then that point wouldn't really be valid. And maybe they would buy less. Either way, that was their claim. Brilliant. So we've got these two claims. Number one, we've got the sole rights to sell milk. And number two, this is a sort of a draw into the shop, and we're losing out on the other profits. So he points out a few different problems with this. Now, on a very, very general topic discussion about competition, when you're opening competition, the Gemara's got a machlokes tanoim, whether one shop can stop another shop opening in the same... Hasagas Gevul, brilliant. So in the sugya of Daf Chof Aleph on a base in Bav Basra, the Chachamim, who are makel about opening up another competing store, they say the only reason why you can open a competing store is because you both, the Losh of the Gemara is, Hu Oysa B'Seich Shaloi, or Hu Oysa B'Seich Shaloi. Both of them are doing in their own properties, and whoever wants to decide to go to whichever shop, that's up to the customer's choice. And the fact that I've opened up another shop, I'm not necessarily doing something active to draw in the customer. Therefore, the Chachamim say that it is mutter. Who is for social life? Who is for social life? You got a shop.
Each other, we make it worse.
No, the Gemara's talking about next door to each other. The Chachamim are matter to open up a competing store next door to the other shop, if it fits into this category title. Who is for social life? Who is for social life?
What does the word active? But sign on a window?
That is the $1 million question.
What? It happened in town here.
What was that?
Oh, well, sorry?
It happened in town.
So the question is, what's considered an active, what's considered stepping out the boundaries of who is a sexual over who is a sexual? Now, what does everyone think? The milkman going around asking people in their houses and telling them, do you want to come to join my milkman list? Would everyone agree that that sounds like someone who's not doing B'Seich Shaloi? He's not opening a shop and letting people to decide. He's going to them and convincing them and presenting his idea and telling them how convenient it will be. It might even be a more expensive service, but they won't need to leave the shop. They might save money on other things, like you were mentioning. They might not end up wasting money in shops. Is that who is a B'Seich Shaloi? So that was his first point in his tshuva, that Rav Landau said would be problematic. The fact that it doesn't sound like he's doing B'Seich Shaloi, rather he's venturing out to try and snatch customers. That was the first point. The second point is a point that we find.
Even if it charges more.
Even if it charges more. Who? The competing service.
Yeah.
Yeah, his service that he's offering, we're going to discuss this point in a minute, might be a better service. It might be worth more.
It is a service. The
fact that I'm charging more doesn't always translate into it's creating fair competition for the previous guy because he's got a cheaper shop, because the new guy might be offering a better service, which would still be, let's say, cause an unfair balance. So it might not be always a consideration of the price. The second point is that there seems to be, according to some poskim, a concept called marufya. And what's marufya? It's where a Jew has a certain non-Jewish person who he does business dealings with on a regular basis, and they have this relationship between them. Is it mutter for another Jew to go and poach the non-Jewish person and take over that relationship? Would it be permitted?
No.
Sorry?
No.
So you're suggesting that it wouldn't. So now there's a big, big machlokes about this. Now the materium, there is materium in such a situation for a yid to go and convince the non-Jewish person to come to them and to instead of taking the service from the first yid, to come and get the service from the second yid. Now Rav Landau points out that this is going to be very limited. It will be very limited to a non-Jewish person for a few reasons. Therefore, in our situation, where all the customers are Jewish, to go and convince them to join a new service, you wouldn't be able to use the heter of marufya. That's what Rav Landau points out, that if you'd want to come in to try and be matted based on this heter, that there are some mekilim By Marufia, you wouldn't be able to, since you don't fit all the criteria necessary. Now, there's another point that he raises. This is from the Ramban. The Ramban says that there are certain things that a person's allowed to do, even when they're a competing stall. For example, the Gemara says, are you allowed to hand out nuts?
Sweets to children.
Sweets to children. Are you allowed to do that? So the Gemara says, you are allowed to do that. Now the Gemara says, why are you allowed to do that? Oh, because the other one can do it as well. So the Ramban has a he has a condition in this ruling. He says that the only reason why the shop who started handing out sweets can defend himself by saying, you could also do it, is only because he's an existing competitor. That's what the Ramban says. I'm not going to go into his reasoning. But the Ramban says, if you're an existing competitor, to bring it up a level with an incentive would be permitted based on the fact that you could tell your other competitor that he could also join in this incentive. That's only when you're two existing competitors. But if you want to start off a new business, al yaday, this extra incentive, Ramban says that would be awesome. So for example, if I would like to, you've got a shop that sells shoes, and I want to open up a new shop, and with my new shop, I tell everyone, right, my new shop's opening, I'm going to give everyone a free pair of sandals. That, according to the Ramban, would be awesome. So in our situation, says Rav Landau, it's much worse by the milkman. It's not just the fact that I'm giving him a pair of sandals with the shoe, I'm actually making the shoe better and making the shoe much more attractive by saying I'm going to deliver it. And he said that according to the Ramban, to open such a business and such a business model would also be problematic. So far we've addressed three points that he's brought out. The first one we said was that here, it doesn't sound like he's doing oisim essentially, he's venturing out. The second point was, you can't rely on the heter of Marufia. And the third point was that he's starting a new business with an extra incentive to attract new customers, that going to Ramban would be a problem. Now the fourth point was addressing the second claim that the shop owner had. What was the second claim the shop owner had? That you are destroying my profits on my other items I'm selling in the shop. How can you do that? Oh, so it sounds like you're suggesting it's grammar, it's indirect. Would that be a heter in this situation?
No.
So there is a Gemara in that very same Gemara, in that very very same Gemara where we just spoke about the sugya of Asagas Gvul and the machlokes we brought of machlokes Tanoim about whether you're allowed to open up a competing store. The Gemara there says another halacha that if I have set up a trap to catch a fish, and that fish I've set it up in a situation where it's kemat guaranteed that fish is going to come to my trap. And the halacha is, the person who set the trap up can push away all the other fishermen and tell them to go away. Because the way Rashi understands the Gemara, and he explains it, is that since it's so guaranteed that the fish is going to enter the first fisherman's trap, then it's as if he's already got it. Therefore, someone else to interfere would be mazik. It would be considered damaging him. Now, says Rav Landau, like this person's claim, what is the milk? We said milk isn't just milk. Milk is a trap. Sorry to reveal that to everyone. But milk is a trap. And the fact that this person is taking away this person's sale of milk by offering people the milkman service, he's destroying the first fisherman's trap. He's destroying the shop's ability to trap the customers to come in. And especially, he says, in a situation where he's the sole supplier at the moment because he's the only makolet in the neighborhood, it's so guaranteed that all the customers are going to come in, he says that it's going to be awesome based on that.
Can the second makolet open?
Oh, so we're not going to go into that now, but like we said, there are situations where you can open a competing store, like we said, according to the Chachamim, you can. In this situation, we said that he didn't just open up a second makolet, there's all the other considerations. You're asking with regards to the trap, how will it fit into the store, to the din of the trap. It's a very good question. And the halacha of the trap altogether is a question whether we pass it like that in case of the trap. It's a very good question that you're asking. So now, if we just bring it back to our case of swapping the voucher in the shop, have we learned anything today which could shed light on how we should practice when we want to do such a voucher swap in a shop? Anyone? Is it guaranteed that the person standing in the queue is going to be spending the money that he's got in his hand? How guaranteed is that? Pretty much guaranteed. If he's standing there with his product in his hand, about to hand it over to the person behind the till, that sale is a done deal. So even if he's not done a kinyan and he's not passed over the money, it's in the trap.
The queue is ready to pay.
Yeah? Sorry? No, but the profit, not about the kinyan of the item that he's buying. That, the fact, once he's given that money, the shop's made the profit. So that profit, how in the bag is that profit with regards to the shop? That, we'd say, sorry? Yeah? So therefore, in such a situation, we've definitely got that concept of, number one, that he's ruined the trap. He's interfered with the trap. That would be a problem. And number two, so like we explained, that when there's £1,000of deals coming through, my £500 because of my voucher, and £500 of Shimon, and I tell Shimon, actually, you use my £500 voucher instead of you paying cash, I've depleted the shop's profits from 1,000 to 500.
The first shop has had the cash.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about the shop money that he's got already from the voucher. I'm talking about the money that he could have from the new customer. That money he could get from the new customer, I am interfering with that and stopping him getting it.
Is the shop justified in refusing to refund the money that was?
It's a very, very good question. Very, very good question. And in situations where it's a mekach tos, one of my colleagues in Koyl said that it wouldn't make a difference if you have a sign on the wall. If it's a mekach tos, a mekach tos. However many signs you put on the wall to say you're only giving vouchers.
Therefore he's entitled to his money.
But I'm not qualified to pass them, but yeah. Don't ask Rob about Shire, it's a very, very good point. But originally the case I was going to use was a case where he found a bug in the wine. So someone told me, no, you can't use that case, that's a mekach tos. So change it to the wrong wine.
If he's not shot yet, you've got a choice to go to Hamptons or Colbert and do whatever you want.
Oh. Yeah. In such a situation. When you're outside the shop. So I've even heard that inside the shop, not yet in the queue, might be also not a problem.
Even in the car, if the food's already in the car.
No, if the car, the food's, what do you mean the food's in the car?
Food's in the store, he's about to go to the till.
Oh, in the cart, in the trolley. Yeah. It's a hard one, it's a grey area. Yes.
But outside the shop, should be no
In the first place, given this fact. In the first place, giving this voucher, how justified is the shopkeeper to only give a voucher a credit instead of the money back?
Yeah, so we're saying that that's a very, very good question. And in a situation where it would be a mekach tos, it seemingly would be a problem and he wouldn't be allowed to just give him a voucher, he'd have to give money back. In this scenario, where it was the customer's mistake, wasn't the shop's mistake, or it wasn't a faulty item, then he might be entitled to. Could be it's due to the fact he put a sign up, or even without a sign, that might not make a difference.
Entitled to what, sorry?
To put up, to give him just a voucher instead. So as we come towards the end of the time, I just want to give you a few more examples where this might be relevant. One example that I came across was often in Eretz Yisrael, then a lot more people there use public transport. Now what if you've got a whole group of Yidden waiting in a bus stop? Can a taxi go there and stop by the taxi and offer all the people to use a service?
Why?
Why not? It's a very, very good point that you're pointing out. Can you give a lift? So at the moment I've asked this question in a form where it's a taxi trying to make money. But can a person giving a lift, I've seen it might be a machleitz about that. To do a chesed might be a machleitz.
Really?
So what's she doing?
Sorry?
Anybody on a shiv using their bus stop?
It's common practice.
Yeah, no, that might be a good question.
It's common practice.
So that's one scenario. I want to ask, present another scenario.
It's like sending a letter to somebody, giving somebody to take the post for me instead of taking a stamp, using the stamp.
He paid for a stamp, that story.
I think we need another shear on that point.
Yeah. Like I'm saying, I just want to give a disclaimer. Right. This is just a shear psicha. This is a huge topic, and there's a lot more to be discussed and be gone through. But I just want to give two more scenarios that are very that I found a very geschmack. The other scenario was a case where, what about if you're standing in a money changer, and you spot the guy behind you, he's got dollars, you've got pounds, and you realise you could help each other out. And you're both in the queue waiting to swap the money by the money changer. Would it be permitted to cut the middleman out and just go directly and offer him to swap? Or would that be a problem?
In his premises.
And he's in the queue and he's about to do it. So it would all seem problematic based on what we've discussed. Just one last case which I found quite humorous, and it's very relevant. Well, hopefully not relevant that people do it, but it's relevant because it's coming up to Pesach. Was that imagine there was Reuven and Shimon. And Reuven had a tremendous whiskey collection. And Shimon always was jealous. And he really wanted to taste some of the whiskey, to get some of the geschmacky investments of the whiskey. And Reuven, like a good youth, what did he do? He sold his chametz to a goy. So what did Shimon do?
He went to the goy
and said to the goy, can I purchase this whiskey? And the goy was like, okay. And he offered him a bit more, and the goy was very happy. And Reuven came after Pesach to the goy to buy his chametz back. And the goy said, I'm sorry, I sold it. I said, who to? He said,
You can't sell it on Pesach.
So it was after Pesach. There was a time frame, and it was possible, and it was a sale which the Rav wasn't conducting. It was one that Reuven himself was conducting. Right. So this question is brought in the Magen Avraham, Hashem, the Masses Binyamin, in Hilchos Pesach, such a scenario. What would you think? This case, based on what we've learned today, would it be problematic? How guaranteed is it that Reuven was going to get his whiskey back? Like you say, sorry? Yeah, 100%. You're saying it should work, but could be there's another problem of a Jew interfering in something that was guaranteed for the first Jew to get. So when it's done in such a way, like this situation, like you're saying, 100%.
Except the guy can give him a voucher, and that might be.
If it's such a guarantee, is it a good enough sale in the first place?
Sorry?
If it's such a guarantee that it's coming back to him, is it a good enough sale in the first place?
Oh, that's a very good question. So it would seem like it is.
It is.
It's pretty much good. I hope so.
But his friend shouldn't have done it in the first place. His friend who bought it shouldn't have done it in the first place.
Yes, that's what we're saying. Based on what we've learned, it would seem problematic.
Irrespective of what it was.
Yeah, and the Masses Binyamin Paskins, that Taka, Shimon would have to return the whiskey to Reuven to such an extent. Because today, all we did was just outline the problems. I didn't give the problems any names, and I didn't tell you how to rectify the problem. Is it just something that he can stop him doing the Kanala Habar? Is it something that you have to return any lost profit? And these are all things that would need to be discussed in a further share. But we've outlined some Roshi Prokim, as they say. Everyone should have a prayer for the word.